Welcome to DGT Radio, DGT's knowledge sharing podcast, exploring themes and topics that are relevant to our everyday work. AI at EC Network, eBriefing Lab, eSummary, AI Explorers, DGT GPT Lab. What and who is behind these new tools, services, and networks recently developed by DigiTranslation? Christian Brașoveanu from the Informatics Unit in DigiTranslation tells us all about it. Hello, Christian Brașoveanu.
Hi, Carolina.
Thank you for accepting my invitation to talk to DGT Radio. We are meeting on Teams as we are located on opposite sides of the Ardennes. I'm in Brussels and you're in Luxembourg. We have some microphone problems, so we hope that the sound will be okay. And if it's not, please bear with us. Christian, you work in DigiTranslation, in the commission, in the team dealing with e-translation and AI language services. You're a member of Unit R3, which is DG Translation's informatics unit, and you are the coordinator of the AI at EC network in DGT. So the AI at EC network started as an informal network of colleagues in DGT who wanted to explore how artificial intelligence could be further used and developed for language services. And then 1 year ago, at the beginning of 2023, you were mandated to create a commission-wide community. And since then, the network has grown exponentially. Rarely a week goes by without AI at EC organizing some kind of event. The latest one on e-briefing attracted 600 colleagues. And currently, the network has more than 2,800 members, and the members come from over 60 directorate generals in the Commission and from different EU institutions and from different EU agencies. So I see the AI at EC network as a think tank and a laboratory, so a place where you experiment and develop new tools, and where you brainstorm about new uses, new needs, and new projects. Would you agree with this definition, Christian? Is that how you would describe the AI at EC network?
Yes, that's a very good description. It is an exploratory community because it aims to facilitate new projects and eventually also new tools and services coming from such projects and explorations. But it is also this kind of knowledge community for sharing and building knowledge in the area of AI. So it brings together both business end users and technical experts. And actually, that's quite challenging to ensure that kind of bridge, but it is also very important. And of course, it is an integral part of the e-translation and AI language services sector at DGT, which continues to be the main concentration of AI activities at the Commission, in particular developing and running the e-translation flagship AI project and other AI-powered services. And we also always have to remember that we are not alone in this. This is all the excellent result of a very close partnership between DGT and DigiConnect under the Digital Euro program.
In DGT, who is behind AI at EC network? Who is the team in DGT, in Unit R3 and maybe in the rest of DGT?
So we have now a dedicated AI at EC network team inside the e-translation and AI languages services sector. We are four at the moment, including me, but many other colleagues from the sector contribute in many different ways. And other colleagues from different parts of DGT have been actively involved in very concrete explorations as well. If you want to have some concrete examples, in particular, the Bulgarian, Czech, Dutch, English, Lithuanian, Polish, Romanian, Slovak, and Portuguese language departments have been involved through volunteers, but also colleagues from the planning unit, the editing unit, the terminology unit, and the Evaluation and Analysis Unit.
I know that DigiTranslation has launched an impressive number of new AI-based services in the last years. eBriefing has just come out. There is also eSummary, Termite One, Speech-to-Text, a tool for document classification, a tool for anonymization. Have I missed any of these new tools?
Yeah, I think you missed only one or two, so almost all of them are there. Yeah, initially it was just the translation, but then in the last few years we added more services, and yes, eSummary became a service last summer in June, and it had originally started as an exploration in the DGT AI network. Mm-hmm. And then eBriefing is the latest one, and eBriefing is a milestone also in the sense that it is the first service at any EU institution to use the new form of generative AI that we hear about all the time today,
mm-hmm,
through
mm-hmm.
these new large language models.
Were all these tools tested and developed within DGT?
Well, they are all developed within DGT. Some of them are completely from A to Z developed within DGT, in the sense that even the AI models that power them are trained, built within DGT. Others use open source AI models that are available out there and other open source tools. And the only one at the moment that also uses a third-party commercial AI model is eBriefing, because eBriefing uses a GPT-4 model, mm-hmm, that is built by a third party and made available to us through the framework contract that the Commission has with Microsoft.
Okay.
But some services are developed based on, all the services are developed based also on consultation with our partners and at DigiConnect. And sometimes some of them come as proposals from DigiConnect. Other times they come as proposal from DGT.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes there are some very clear use cases that have very significant value and potential in everyday work at the Commission or beyond, where we take the initiative to start something, and this was the case of eBriefing. Every time
okay.
we were asking about the most important or the priority use case that we should try for the Commission and beyond, inside the Commission at least, it was all the time briefings as the first preference.
Uh-huh. So can you say a few words about eBriefing in particular? So what does it do? And what does it not do? Because I know that it's important to mention what these tools can do, but also what they cannot do.
Mm-hmm. So eBriefing started as an idea to try to facilitate the process of drafting a policy briefing, in particular in the policy DGs at the Commission, because this is a very regular activity that actually requires a lot of time. And especially the very first stages are quite time intensive, because normally you have to start from some input documents that may be recent relevant briefings or other background documents, and you have to bring all your information together into a new draft and then continue to work on that. And very often that activity is actually manual. It involves a lot of copy-pasting.
Mm-hmm.
So eBriefing's primary purpose is to facilitate those initial stages. And based on a given set of input files, it brings together all the relevant information, already giving it the shape of a first draft for a new policy briefing. But it's not just for policy briefing, because the same scenario applies for many other types of outputs. And the same way as we handle policy briefings, we can also apply the same approaches also to other types of output, like speeches or various types of replies or minutes based on transcriptions from meetings some other form of text content,
mm-hmm,
if you like. It is not a chatbot. It is not a conversational assistant. So it is not like something like ChatGPT or Copilot or Gemini, mm-hmm, or other assistants that are intended to be used in a conversational format. Like you ask a question, you get back an answer, you ask another question, or you, mm-hmm, ask the model to refine the output. No, this is intended to be an automation service, to facilitate the process, the parts of a task that is normally a regular task with relatively structured output. Not all the times, of course, because not all policy briefings are the same, or speeches or articles and so on. But very often there are also types of output that are quite regular and with a predefined structure. And that's where you can have very significant time savings in everyday work in very many places at the Commission.
So who can use e-briefing? Anybody in the Commission? Also staff from other institutions, EU institutions?
Yeah, all the services that we provide from DGT under this broad umbrella of Digital Europe AI-based services are available to all EU staff at all EU institutions, bodies and agencies, but also beyond. And by beyond, I mean in particular the national public administrations at any level, but also small and medium-sized enterprises in the EU, and also academia, social, civil society, and freelance translators as well, since we are providing the machine translation service. But all of this just inside the EU. So our services are not available outside the EU.
Where can you find these tools? Are they gathered on one web page that people can access?
Yes, we have the main page where we also provide the translation and the other services. And that normally, if you do a search for Digital Europe language tools, it brings it up. I think it's language-tools.europa.eu, if I remember correctly, but probably safer to search for it. And that is through the main landing page. So that page is also visible externally to the eligible users. But then inside the Commission, as you know, e-translation has been for quite some time available through the top tools list that you have on my Intracom. When you click on that, there is e-translation somewhere halfway down. And now that label says e-translation/e-briefing. And it is a link that takes you to the main Digital Europe AI-based services. But it's also important that e-briefing is, like all the other services, is also available as what is called an API, a service that can be integrated into another service. And there is, for example, ongoing work at DG FISMA, who runs the Commission's management system for briefings and speeches, called BASIS. And it will become possible for policy officers across the Commission to use e-briefing directly from inside this BASIS system.
Before launching e-briefing, and actually when you were in the process of developing it, you had an e-briefing lab, right? With a number of colleagues, volunteers who tested the tool. Is this right?
Yes. Yes. It was not only about testing it, it was also about designing it, because this new technology is based on a very large AI model on the one hand, and on the other hand, a set of very explicit instructions, essentially teaching or telling the model about how to perform a certain task. So the purpose of the e-briefing lab was to bring together in particular policy officers from across the Commission, but also colleagues from DGT, and in particular colleagues with linguistic skills are particularly valuable in this context, because this is all about clear and detailed description of a certain sequence of steps in a task. And that really is something where language and the quality of the language used to describe the task really can make a big difference in the output of the model. So it was intended to be a combination, you know, of colleagues who would be able to make the language of the instructions better, and also colleagues who work with policy briefings in order to tell us, you know, what they want to see in the output. So the primary purpose was to collaboratively design this these instructions that we have in the background in e-briefing. And those instructions are quite extensive, like it's 1.5 pages of detailed steps and what the model should do to produce a draft briefing. And it started with just 50 volunteers from quite already quite a few DGs, and then very quickly went to 200 and then to over 300 because everybody wanted to try it. And we also collected a lot of interesting feedback and a lot of suggestions that are now on our to-do list for improvements in the next versions.
What I find interesting is that you're mentioning how linguists were important in this collective effort, not only the end users, but also language specialists, huh?
Yeah, some people would say that the linguists are the new programmers because in this new world dominated by large language models, the interaction with these models is in natural language. So mm-hmm. It's no longer giving instructions in a particular programming language, but really, you really, really write your instructions in natural language. Like you just tell the model directly that I would like you to act as a mm-hmm. policy officer in this case, and mm-hmm. I would like you to produce a draft policy briefing following steps and following principles and basic rules. It may sound easy and that, oh, anybody can do it. And for some basic use case is yes. If you just want to tell the model, oh, give me a summary of this piece of text, then yes, you don't need particular skills. But as you get into more complex use cases and you try to control the model, to guide the model into producing output that is more extensive and more complex and requires a little bit more reasoning, so to speak, by the model, it's not easy. And different ways of putting things in the instructions produce different results. And that is why they call this new field more of an art than okay. not a mm-hmm. science or a strict engineering discipline. So
right.
yeah, they call it prompt engineering, but then
prompt
they call it also the
yeah.
the art of prompt engineering.
Yeah, because you were using the word instruction, but I kept on thinking that's what we call prompts, right? That's what we call the prompts, the way you talk to the AI, huh?
Well, the prompt includes everything that you give the model. So that, mm-hmm. that in the case of e-briefing, for example, that will include not only the instructions, but also the input text that comes from the input files.
Mm-hmm.
So you may give a model just instructions, and then you can say instructions equal prompt.
Mm-hmm.
But you might give some instructions to give something to do something with a piece of text. And
right.
then you have on the one hand the instructions and the other hand the input text.
Mm-hmm.
And together, combined, they form the prompt that goes into the model itself.
I see. Yeah, I find what you say very reassuring in a sense, because, many linguists and translators, I feel a bit threatened by the artificial intelligence. But what you're saying is that there's actually room for, new professions, new programmers, new language specialists talking with the machine, right?
Yeah, or AI whisperers, as we call them sometimes.
AI whisperer. This is so nice. It's like, yeah, we're really whispering to AI's ears.
Yes.
Okay, very nice. Very poetic.
Well, if you ask ChatGPT to give you a fancy title for a workshop about AI, very often it will include AI whisperers as a phrase in some suggestions. So I'm afraid it's not very original, but
I think
it captures very well the idea that you become this kind of AI master and trying to control the model into doing what you want it to do.
So eBriefing Lab was or still is, I don't know, an experimental environment that you set up. There is another one, I think, called GPT Lab, right? And this one is maybe our future chat box?
Not really. So eBriefing Lab continues to exist because novice prompts are never going to be finished business because mm-hmm. Models evolve. One particular set of instructions works for one model, but not for another model. And it may work perfectly as you want in the current version of the model, but not exactly the same in the next version of the model. So this prompt engineering part is going to be a constant activity in maintaining and updating and adjusting and improving those instructions for the AI model.
Mm-hmm.
So the eBriefing Lab continues to serve that role with other colleagues involved to make sure that we constantly adapt the instructions, but we also intend to adapt it so that it can also accommodate other types of output as well. So we started with the focus on policy briefings in particular, but I already mentioned that are also other types of output or tasks that have been in exploration already and can become additional options to do something in kind of the same environment. And I can mention, for example, that with the colleagues in the editing unit, in unit S3, there have been explorations about editing, about providing a service that can help the authors to improve their text before sending it to our editing unit. So in a way, it will also facilitate the work of our editors in unit S3. And there are also other considerations for generating other types of output, like replies or reports of various kinds. So eBriefing Lab, at the moment, we are calling it eBriefing Plus Lab. Mm-hmm. But probably at some point soon, we will have to change the name so that there isn't a too strong connection just to briefings.
Right.
The DGT GPT Lab was a little bit different because it was the very first one. So it was intended just as a very small scale, immediate engagement with the new type of AI technology. We started it immediately after the GPT-4 model, which is still the top of the pack when it was launched in March. Okay, it's in a later version now, but it's still the same model. Mm-hmm. And we started it.
Yeah, you make it sound like it was 10 years ago, but it was actually just a few months ago. Huh?
Yes. not even 1 year, and it's incredible. Yeah, it's quite incredible. So that was the kind of simple, quick way of starting to explore for various use cases in DGT and beyond, with a small group of colleagues from the group of DGT AI explorers and then other colleagues who were interested. And some explorations were about editing, others were about technology extraction. There was also about error detection or translation, of course, but of course with translation we have more systematic explorations in our own team in e-translation. And it was not, because you mentioned whether this is a chatbot, it's not a chatbot. So again, the GPT Lab as well was intended to be aimed at automation services. You know, there are certain things that you need to do on a regular basis. They are time consuming, or maybe some parts of that process can be facilitated. And if we have a good recipe for a prompt to do that, then we can put a service in place to do that. It's not a chatbot in the sense that, again, it doesn't have that conversational interface. There is an ongoing debate in the external world out there as well at the moment that everybody expects also the providers of these models to scale up in terms of complexity. Like, there was a lot of hype and a lot of interest in having this kind of conversational interfaces in the first year. But now things have to develop further. And that further development means that you really need to use these things in actual everyday processes at work to make organizations more efficient, faster, and so on. And you won't do that by having conversations with your chatbot. You do that by developing more complex applications that are powered by these models, but complex applications that actually do something concretely by themselves without you having to have half an hour of conversation to get somewhere with the model. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And also because when we integrate a good example of a prompt or instructions to do a certain thing, then we encode in those instructions the collective wisdom and best practices of many colleagues who have tried and have experimented. So we take that wisdom and we put it into a set of instructions, and then everybody can benefit from the result, rather than everybody on their own trying individually to get the best output out of the model. So the future, I think, is a combination. On the one hand, there are many use cases where you do need a conversational assistant just to ask some questions, get some answers, ask again, ask to do something, ask to refine what it has just done. But then there are also other use cases where we need to target automation services. So things that we know how they happen. We know what the output should look like. And if we can generate that, then we save time that we can use somewhere else and not repeatedly doing those regular things.
That brings me to at EC Network being also a think tank. So the large team, as we said, of more than 2,800 specialists and non-specialists who meet on Teams, who exchange practices, who share knowledge, who make presentations and info sessions, who exchange use cases and new developments. What would you say are the main outcomes of this knowledge building? And what are the main activities that you have within this large team?
On the knowledge sharing and building side, as you mentioned, in particular, a lot of webinars and workshops and other presentations, and they tend to be in two major categories. So on the one hand, you have the more general sharing events, where, by the way, we work very closely with our knowledge management team, speaking of how many people are involved from across DGT. It would not be possible without their help. They have been great in helping us organizing a very large number of events in the last year. Then you have the more technical deep dives that are for experts. So they are both important. And even in the general sharing ones, we get a little bit into the technical details about what technology is used in the background and how it is used, because it really is becoming more and more difficult to separate technology from any profession. If I may quote somebody whom I heard in a recent presentation, and this is the CEO of NVIDIA. So leaving aside the hype and the sales speeches that he has to do, I kind of think he was right. And he made a comment in a recent presentation saying that all fields, all industries are going to become technology industries. So in a way, we cannot say anymore, or at least we won't be able to say anymore, that, oh, I'm going to just do this part that has nothing to do with technology, and then there is the other part with a clear separation where it's all about technology. No, it's all of us. I mean, it's not something new, right? We have been adopting and working with technology as an intermediary between us and whatever we produce as output or as a process for many years already, since the adoption of computer technology. But and this process is just continuing with the new technology. So it's really important to bring in the more technical details as well for everybody, not just for the technical experts, because that separation is less and less sustainable. So as a result of those activities, I think and I hope that it is a contribution to a lot more awareness and learning, but also about not only about the technology, but also about what is happening across the commission and what other people do as projects, or what tools they may have developed in other DGs, and what else is available. And it's also about the external world very much, which is still moving very, very fast. So there is a lot of information also about what happens out there, and what in particular may have an impact on us, whether inside the commission or in Europe, and what may be useful, what may be risky, and so on. So it is a lot about awareness, about learning, and about sharing as well, not only knowledge, but also sharing results. Because when colleagues on the technical expert side this time learn about some example of an experiment or a project in some other DG, then they may also be interested in the same use case, and then they can reuse the results from that other experiment. So this was also very important.
Now, eBriefing is the first service based on generative artificial intelligence, based on GPT-4-like type of service in the commission. Do you have other projects in store, other new developments that you could tell us about?
Yes, all the explorations that we have had so far are the candidates to become either extensions to eBriefing or standalone services. I mentioned already the exploration together with the colleagues in the editing unit, which we have been calling an assisted editing project. And that is on the list to become a new service offered in the same way as e-briefing and based on the same technology. And then in this list of AI needs at the Commission, we have an entire category that is about text content generation. And this is where you find things like briefings, minutes, replies of various kinds to various types of communication, different types of report, editing as well, you know, linguistic improvement and proofreading and other similar tasks. So everything related to text content, whether to generate new text content or to do something with some text content. And in principle, all of them can become the same kind of service. And of course, some of them are higher priority than others. But the plan at the moment is to add more options to in a similar way to e-briefing, and also to continue to improve the output of e-briefing based on the suggestions that we receive.
Well, Christian, I know that you have a very busy schedule with several other meetings just after our conversation, so I don't want to keep you too long. I was wondering, do you have a message that you want maybe to convey to our colleagues in DGT from R3 to the rest of DGT?
Well, if it's in particular about the AITC network and these new AI explorations in particular, maybe many of our colleagues in DGT remember that our very first free workshops a few years ago were under the heading AI is eating the world.
It was not really an original title.
But it was becoming increasingly clear, I think, that it was a realistic one, right? So, but what I want to say, because I know, I mean, this is both hype and controversy and excitement and fears all combined in a single topic. And I just want to say that that heading is not really just about disruption, but it's about transformation. And that transformation does bring important challenges. So nobody is saying that it's easy and it's all fine, given especially the speed at which it happens, and it will happen increasingly. But if we manage to navigate this transformation successful, I think our future work experience in whatever we do can also become more interesting and rewarding. And on the other hand, let's not forget that this is the same transformation that we started to experience in DGT already in 2017 with the arrival of e-translation and the new neural machine translation technology. Mm-hmm. So we actually already know this transformation very well, and we have experience with it in contrast to a lot of other people and colleagues in other areas mm-hmm. where are only now catching up with this mm-hmm. new technology. I mean, we experienced the initial, again, both mm-hmm. excitement and fears, but now it mm-hmm. has been a number of years since then. So we have adapted. Machine translation is part of everyday work. And I think, as I was saying, it is an enabler to facilitate, you know, to allow us to concentrate our attention and efforts on the parts that are more creative in translation or in other activities.
Well, thank you very much, Christian Brachovianoa. Thanks a lot for finding a bit of time in your very busy schedule to talk to us and to talk to us about the AITC network and AI-based services that have been launched by DGT. I wish you all the best for the projects to come, and I hope to have the opportunity to talk to you again about other aspects of AI-based services or artificial intelligence.
Thank you so much, Caroline, and thanks a lot for having me. It was a pleasure. And maybe as a final confirmation, just to let you know that I did make the effort and answer the questions myself. I did not use e-briefing or ChatGPT to give you the replies.
Maybe we will have this kind of warning at the beginning of any speech and letters, yes. You know, nowadays, or emails, yeah. You know. This
actually,
is entirely human-produced content. Yeah. Yeah.
We do put a warning in the output of e-briefing. It says exactly that the first version of this text was generated with a model for generative AI. Not this interview, just to show that we have made the effort.
Yeah, and these are our real voices.
Yes.
And we are real people. Okay, thank you very much, Christian.
Okay, thank you.
This was DGT Radio with Christian Brasoveanu, coordinator of the AI at EC Network in DigiTranslation. The music was by Thomas Perissino, and you also heard Days Past by In Closing. Thank you for listening.